In this reel of CO1 Movies, the boys kick off their month of scary movies with the King and Kubrick classic, The Shining. In theaters, they head out to see the time travel action thriller, Looper. From there, it's off to the trailer park for the 2012 remake of Red Dawn. In movie news, we ask if you're ready for a Hungry Hungry Hippos movie, if you'd care if The Wizard of Oz was converted to 3D, and whether or not Lincoln has any influence over your presidential vote. It's the 125th reel of COL Movies. Here's Johnny!
I'm gonna make him an offer again.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Go ahead. Make my day.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
May the force be with you.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a brand spanking new reel of COL Movies. My name is Jeff, and I would like to introduce my creepy co-hosts, Steve and Carlos.
Ooh. Yeah, I can't make that noise.
I love our sound, our special sound effect for tonight.
Special sound effect. Oh, the
Jeff's beep because he needs a 9-volt battery. If any listeners out there have any 9-volt batteries, I'd like to send them to Jeff. You can send them to
We'll send you the address. Anyways. So Ray's out this week. He's on a special assignment to go see a four weddings and a funeral. Or I'm not sure about the weddings, but definitely
too soon,
unfortunately. But in any case, let's move right into the news.
News on the mark.
Monopoly, Action Man, and Hungry Hungry Hippos films planned.
Oh, yeah. I just thought it was kind of ironic. I thought it was kind of ironic in the fact that we did post that Hungry Hungry Hippos movie poster at one point. I did find out that, and this is on several of the blogs that's running out there right now, the LA Times has reported that Hasbro properties for Action Man, Hungry Hungry Hippos, and Monopoly have been purchased. So we're going to see where it goes. Apparently, Monopoly already has a screenplay written and hopes to shoot with Ridley Scott.
Oh, he's producing, not directing.
Yeah. But that's kind of wackadoo. Not really sure where Hungry Hungry Hippos is going. But I think it's animated is what they're saying at this point. And then Action Man has not really been talked much about. I'm still trying to remember Action Man myself personally. I know all of these things, but that's one I'm not real familiar with. But yeah. Still, thought it was interesting.
I saw Battleship on a plane in the last month. Mm-hmm. I avoided it pretty bad just because I just didn't think I would like it. And I started watching it because it was on the plane, and I realized, you know what, this isn't as horrible as I thought. I mean, it's kind of stupid, and it's like Pearl Harbor light, mm-hmm. Which is weird because Pearl Harbor was Pearl Harbor light. But I found myself saying that as a starting off point, you can do worse than Battleship. But Monopoly, I don't really understand how – it's not so much that I don't want my childhood rape or anything. It's that I don't understand exactly where the concept is with Monopoly. I mean
– it's probably going to be like Alec Baldwin buying up New York or something. It's probably going to be something to that nature. I mean Battleship, they took it in such a different way. I imagine Monopoly is going to be something like that. It's going to be some big corporate – gobbledygook movie, maybe.
It's going to be it's going to be some sort of like real estate drama.
Yeah.
a city real estate drama. I would really like to see it more along the lines of Clue, though, where they really don't take it that seriously. Yeah. And while they have all these references to the game, they don't necessarily mean the same things that they have in the game or something. I mean, Clue is easy because you just put them in the house. The house has these rooms, and you make sure that somebody dies and it has
and these weapons are available, you know, and then you gotcha. Go off to what you can. Monopoly looks a little bit different. There's probably going to be like a couple of people, main characters, or maybe not main characters, that you have this one guy who always walks around with the top hat.
Yeah.
You probably have like some sort of big lady with a fur coat or something walking around with this tiny little Scotty dog. You know, and you just have all these references to the game, and it's just some sort of drama or just like this fast-paced comedy.
I'm gonna build houses and hotels here.
Sure. It's a concept issue. Like Battleship, it's two ships on the water throwing missiles at each other, not able to see each other. That is a concept. With Clue, it's, you know, 12 people in a hotel, in a room, someone's dead, figure out who it is. I mean, these are concepts. Like that translate well to movies because there's something to do, something that can happen that the rest of the movie can be built around.
It's a story.
Monopoly is people buying property and renting it out. Like that's not enough, I think, to make a movie.
So go to jail, but you got to go to jail. You got to get railroads involved.
You also have to look at it as kind of a business, like a business drama thing where you're trying to also take over properties as well. So there can be this drama between characters because they can say, oh, the buildings haven't been kept up. This person's trying to rent it out, but it's not getting the rent that they need. So
maybe it'll be a movie about Walmart.
Yeah, I'll watch it. I'll watch it just to figure out what it is.
Well, at least look at the trailer.
Right.
And see what
And I did find out, too, Action Man is the British version of G.I. Joe. I just looked it up. I was like, how come I don't know Action Man? So that's what it is. It's basically G.I. Joe is the real American hero. Action Man was the British version.
And you know the G.I. Joe movies right now? It's actually G.I. Joe supposed to be some sort of international organization.
Right.
The way they made it sound.
Right.
So they even removed that from the concept. So I don't know.
Yeah. They made it. Yeah. And that was always hard. I always never got that. Like, you know, it's an international organization, but it's run by American Joe, you know, or whatever the guy's name was. So I guess I never took it to be fully international. Even as an 8-year-old, I was like, this is weird.
True.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could also think of it as a, you know, that top-notch military organization. And sure, there's people of different races and cultures because there's a lot of people who migrate or immigrate into the United States, and then they want to serve their country, so they serve it under G.I. Joe. So, anyways, but that's beside the point. So more board game movies and toy movies. Hungry Hungry Hippos. Yeah, that's probably going to be some sort of animated schlock. Might be interesting, but who knows?
Be funnier if it's a horror movie. That would make me happier.
I'd love that poster. They really should make a movie out of that poster. Anyway, moving on. The Wizard of Oz being converted to 3D in 2013.
Yeah. Really? Yeah.
Really?
Well, apparently it's a big year. Warner Brothers is going to be celebrating its 90th birthday. Excuse me. And, or 90th year, I should say, of releasing premium movies. And so they're going to be celebrating with releases of a bunch of stuff for Blu-ray and collectors. But they're also talking that the plan at this point, although not 100%, but the plan is to do a limited theatrical run of Wizard of Oz in 3D conversion prior to the disc release. So, you know, and then some special thing about 40-film DVD collection of Clint Eastwood's work with Warner Brothers Pictures.
That's actually a pretty sweet deal. I mean,
yeah,
it's had a very broad period of work, so it's nice when people take a historical angle to it. Because although we make fun of Clint Eastwood now, because you know he's Clint Eastwood, He does have one of those sort of iconic careers, and so he'll probably be very strong.
Now, and they're also talking about, but they're also talking about several other things, gangster collections, James Dean collections, and stuff like that too. But of course, the big thing here is the post conversion of the Wizard.
Hey, yeah, they got it to 1080p. Might as well go 3D, I suppose.
No, I mean, I actually am okay with that because the Wizard of Oz historically, you know, there was a period of time when people showed off. It showed off the color. I mean, that's kind of one of the movies that Technicolor really was made of. So I think sometimes when we look back at a movie and say, oh, it was a classic, and we kind of forget that when it first came out, it was an attraction. People went to see the color and the dancing midgets and all this other stuff. So, you know, putting it in 3D just sort of continues that.
And it's true. So classic too. I don't know about you, but I think even for a movie that was made, what was that, 90 years ago that this was made? When
Wizard of Oz? 1939. It's the same year as Gone with the Wind, so 38 or 39.
Okay, yeah. So it's so old right now, yet I think it holds up. For what they were able to do at that time and the colors that they used and everything, it's just,
well,
it was just such a very well done movie that it holds up.
Well, and it kind of makes sense because which March of next year is when they're doing Oz the Great and Powerful. Mm-hmm. So if they release this in April, you know, as a 3D thing, it could be an interesting little nice compliment for a change. Yeah. But at the same time, though, I mean, we still have the same old debate all the time about 3D stuff. We really haven't gone back to make films into 3D, though, except, you know, I mean, when I say way back machine, we went back to Titanic. Yeah, we went back to Star Wars. But mm-hmm. we haven't gone, like, past at certain, you know, like 1975.
I think so. I mean, I'd be interested in seeing that because the process sucks. I mean, anyone who's ever talked about the post-processing to 3D, the process sucks. It never quite looks very good. So, right. You know, there's going to be some limitations to films that we don't have the masters for. So right. There's that aspect. But that being said, I'd love to see some of the Cinerama, like the 50s crazy period where film was battling with TV and they released all the weird formats and the smell-o-vision stuff. I'd like to see that kind of stuff done in 3D just to bring back that idea of going to the theater for a spectacle that you can't get anywhere else.
Mm.
Earlier this year, there was a re-release of they try to recreate what Cinerama is, where you have three projectors running on three screens that are blended together. So you have like this wide, super wide angle of view. So like you can't see the edges of the screen. It's like IMAX before IMAX. So I kind of like the idea of making movies, making the theater experience something that's so different than what you get at home.
You pay for what's going on in the theater, right, versus having to wait. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You get shocked in the chairs. Smelling.
Well, like right now, one of my closest movie theater actually has in at least one of their theaters something that they call called D-Box, which is essentially
close to D-Bag. I would laugh too hard.
And they can say in motion, watch this movie in motion FX, which is it's basically the chairs move while you're watching it. So I actually did that for The Possession, and I don't think The Possession's a good enough movie for that sort of thing. Probably should have forked out the cash to try it for Dread.
Okay. But,
I think something like, but that would be one thing that before, because it's like $7 extra or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of expensive to have those additional things.
Is it like the speakers behind your ears and stuff?
No, unfortunately, it didn't have that. Although, I mean, the theater in general had great sound.
Yeah, okay.
They've done the theaters, just regular theater-ish type thing, pretty well for the quality of the projection and quality of the sound. There's other things that are left to be desired, but that's beside the point.
Things have gotten really crazy with sound. I went to see Underworld, whatever it was called, and, like, it was so loud that I had to, like, take five steps. I had to go three, four rows back. I mean, they really need to help us up now.
I have noticed that, too, in a couple of movies lately.
Here's the thing I have. Here's my comment when it comes to sound for movies. Is I don't care where you are in the theater, you should have the same or very similar audio experience.
Mm-hmm.
The person in the front row should basically be hearing the exact same thing that somebody in the back row would be, and vice versa. And it should also be directional. They really need to take advantage of the fact that it is very much a surround sound system, and many movies nowadays do not use that. Dread 3D, when I went to see that, they did use that. Not to the full effect that it could have, but I was hearing bullets and stuff flying past me.
Yeah, but that's one I do remember being loud, because I sat kind of right in the middle, and I was like, I felt like I was being assaulted by sound a little bit. Because it wasn't a full theater, though. I think that that's probably also...
Yeah, there's that aspect.
Well,
also, I think sometimes the theater is not always capable. I mean, you know, I always joke about only going to theaters that I've sort of personally approved. But there are a lot of various standards that are still floating around. And some theaters have that. The theater I go to has 16 screens, and two of them are deemed extreme digital cinema. And they, you know, that's how I have to say it every time I say it.
Right.
And every time I go, they always run this little thing beforehand, and you'll see the sound go left to right, and then right to left, and then back to forward. So they do have a sound system that's able to do that. And then, of course, the film has to be mastered and produced to have that kind of directional sound. But not all films do that. I mean, you go to see like a Woody Allen movie, you're not going to get that rich of a sound mix. So there is there's a lot of variety, and some films use it. I've always been the opinion that the movies are an immersive experience, and so whatever you can do to make me feel like I'm a part of it is going to do better. So I really do appreciate when I go to a movie, and I think Underworld, some of that was like that, where I at some point, you know, where is the zombie? Where is it? You heard in the sound mix,
kind of pumping,
directional, and that worked really well. But that being said, I don't need, you know. I don't need Moonrise Kingdom to have that.
Right. Yeah, so Moonrise Kingdom would not need it at all. But any of these where there's lots of action, some sort of suspense, using that sound system to its advantage is really going to be very important. And I think that I'd rather have a movie where I have an amazing sound system than have 3D. Because I think it's actually more immersive with the sound than with the 3D, because the 3Ds usually end up not being that fantastic, or the 3D doesn't make it immersive. It's actually the audio that's playing around me that I feel is what's making me into it. So if they really more focused on an audio.
I can see both arguments, but yeah, I probably would side with you on that one, Jeff. I'd rather have the feel like I'm in the movie like that then have to sit through bad 3D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, bad 3D. Also, that's another aspect. I think 3D can be an immersive experience, but only if it's subtle. Like, you sense depth, you feel depth. That's subtle. If things are throwing at the screen, that's not immersive, because that's making me realize I'm watching a movie that stuff is throwing at the screen at me.
Yeah.
But I can't remember which movie I saw. Oh, it was Prometheus. You know, when I saw... No, it wasn't Prometheus. It was some movie in 3D where all you could sense was... Oh, when they looked far away, it was far away because it was deeper into the film than when they were. That kind of stuff is immersive, and that's something you can't do post-processing, that you have to shoot it that way. And so that's why I'm worried about Wizard of Oz, is that if, the monkeys are going to jump at me now. I mean, that's not really helpful.
Yeah, true.
And I think the only real movie that really pulled it off, actually, there are two movies that have done it the best. And that's Avatar and Toy Story 3. They were the best ones to effectively use 3D in their ways. Because obviously...
You got to put in Hugo. I think Hugo used 3D in a really effective way.
Yeah, I wasn't as impressed with that.
I didn't really like Hugo myself. That was just me.
Well, that might also be the movie, too.
Yeah.
I
liked about 15 minutes of Hugo. I just wish it was just that 15 minutes.
But yeah,
it was beautiful.
The running, when he's running through the works of the train station, that was probably a great effect, but it didn't really feel much more to me. I almost wished it was better, that it would be better to kind of play towards the theme about the original motion pictures.
Yeah.
But the original, and trying to show trying to keep everything together for that. Everything's still kind of 2D, but still feels real in and of itself.
Truth.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a long conversation for a Wizard of Oz.
Woo! Well, hopefully this one won't be too long.
And also, depending on how Oz, the Great and Powerful, does, maybe it's time for a remake of The Wizard of Oz. I mean, nothing can beat the classic, but hey, can't hurt. That's all
true.
It is. All right. So moving on, last but not least, in honor of the presidential debate, new extended Lincoln TV spot asks for unity.
Yep. I was just curious if anybody saw this. I didn't notice it because I was so frustrated with the debates that, you know, clearly at break times I would run away from the TV or mute for a minute. But upon looking through here, I thought it was really intriguing that they chose to play this during the debate. If you have a chance to watch it, take a minute and just listen to what specifically they're talking about during the course of it. Which is basically like America, let's all come together, know what we were built upon, da ba da, you know, all that kind of stuff. Really interesting choices of scenes and words to use in this specific clip. I don't see it as one that's necessarily saying either candidate, but I have a feeling it's trying to say one specific candidate compared to the other, based off of some of the choices that they made in it. But all in all, I just thought it was an interesting aspect to see that you know, they were going to be putting in, it's kind of a Super Bowl opportunity for a movie because so many people were going to be watching it. So Spielberg took advantage of that and put in his thing for Lincoln. So intriguing. Did either of you get to see it?
No.
I've been looking at a lot of Lincoln stuff, but I have not seen that. I kind of, from what you describe, I can imagine what it's like. And Lincoln actually has a lot of speeches where he does talk, where obviously he's the president during the Civil War. So all his speeches are about bonding together, right? so I can definitely see how it can be kind of striking and a wonderful moment for them to realize, hey, this is a unique situation. Let's put this in there so that people can come to our movie.
The Renewed Shakespeare Company every 4 years around this time, they do their special election edition. So it's also a way of, you know, pulling in the views from the for the people who are thinking politics. This is a political movie.
Sure. Right.
So with that.
Yep.
Let's move on into the past.
You're telling me that you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
The Shining. The Shining.
Stupid.
88% fresh, 91% audience directed by Stanley Kubrick. Directed by, or starring, Jack Nicholson, Shelley Duvall, and Danny Lloyd. So, The Shining. yeah. You know what? Let's talk Kubrick for a second here. This is just me, or so all of his movies, while amazingly different, all have the same thing of they seem to be long, slow, yes, and boring.
That's not always true.
Hey, I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad movie. Don't get me wrong.
I don't think that's great. Clockwork Orange doesn't feel long and slow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. I still get the long and slow of Clockwork Orange, too.
I mean, yes, Eyes Wide Shut is long and slow, but, like, Paths of Glory, Dr. Strangelove. I mean, yes, he went through a period, like, late period, where it was long and slow. Full Metal Jacket, well, no one ever watches anything but the first 20 minutes of Full Metal Jacket. So maybe that's not really fair. But yeah, Kubrick definitely is deliberate. I will say that. He goes as fast as he wants to go.
Yeah, that's true.
And
everything in his movies, there's a point to everything in his movies, which is the sad part about it, because like you, Jeff, like there's a lot of The Shining that I want to fast forward to through just because I'm like, okay, slow. But if you do fast forward through, you're going to miss something that's actually fairly essential to the next thing that happens or something that's going to happen later. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, damn you, Stanley, for forcing me to watch 2 hours and 24 minutes of this movie when I really just want to watch 2 hours of it. Do you know, or something like that. So
yeah. It's a pacing thing to me.
Yeah.
It's his choice of this type of pacing for The Shining, and especially Eyes Wide Shut, which Eyes Wide Shut is a fantastic movie. But and Full Metal Jacket, I've seen the whole thing of Full Metal Jacket. I suffered through the whole thing. All of it is this craftsmanship. I mean, it really is a craftsmanship when I look at it. I mean, the acting and the choices that he makes is it's very much an artistic choice. I mean, he doesn't just do movies to make a movie and make money. He's also being like, I need this to be a work of art.
Yeah. And also, I think you have to remember that he is of the generation where you watch movies in the movie theater. So he knew that he had your undivided attention for 2 hours, 2.5 hours. So yeah. It's definitely an adjustment when you're watching it on DVR or DVD and you have the ability to move around. So, like, he's definitely of the school where you kind of have to let it happen, but it's his job to keep you focused.
True. And I think that that's what he does well, though. Even though it is drawn out at a lot of times, he does keep you focused because you have to realize you have to catch the subtleties that he's pitching. You know, if you don't, you're going to miss something. Or that's what you're going to get when you go with a group of people. You're going to all be talking about, I didn't understand that. Oh, that was in this scene. Oh, I was dozing off. You know, or you know, it's going to be something like that.
Well, you know, now, one thing when I was watching this with my friend for our movie nights, because we both had seen the movie before, so we kind of knew what to expect. We were, because there's a lot of quiet points in it where no one's talking. I mean, there's some sounds going on in there, but it seemed like during the movie we would chat about what's going on in the movie and actually kind of have this kind of social interaction instead of just two guys watching a movie. I could do that at home by myself if I wanted to. Right. But when you have other people watching it, because there's all these silent parts where you can easily be watching the movie, talking and listening to somebody else, that it can pretty much strike up a conversation. You know, like he's in the foyer and he's on his typewriter and it's echoing through the chamber. And it's like, why did he choose to set up his desk
in the middle of this huge foyer? Place? Yeah. Right.
He wants to be kind of secluded. And you know what? The foyer is basically, that's the front door. Basically, that's where everything is supposed to happen. You would think he would have set himself up in like a spare room or something like that instead of right there on the foyer. And I almost think that.
But he's the caretaker, Jeff. He has to make sure he knows what's going on in the place at all hours of the day.
You know? Yeah, really, like anything's going to go on in the middle of winter up there. I mean, come on. And. Well, and there's like, you know, he's typing on the typewriter and the typing is echoing through the chamber. I would almost think of his typing, just of himself typing, and that echoing would probably drive him nuts. And that might be the reason why he actually went kind of crazy.
Well, I know. I used to have a Riley belt bent, and I remember when I first saw that, thinking that was awesome. That's totally where I would put the desk, just because it's like big and dramatic, and it, you know, you get that sound. But you know, obviously, that's one of the things that happens when you're watching a Kubrick film, because everything is so precisely placed. You kind of realize that things don't feel natural, and don't feel like they're just sort of occurring. You're not looking into a window into another world. You're watching this sort of very specific piece of art that's been put together in order to make you feel certain things. And if you do start sort of talking around it as it's happening, it definitely can break you away from, oh, I'm just watching a movie. It's like, no, you're watching something else.
I could see that too. Well, do you guys find, I mean, these are a couple of these things are Ray's notes, so I'm not sure exactly what he meant by it, but I'm assuming that he means still scary question mark means is this still a scary movie for people today? And my answer is yes, mainly because when your mind's going, there's nothing you can do about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's one thing if there's like some creature or a ghost or a, you know, some kind of, you know, rats are coming after you or whatever, like you can defend yourself. But if your mind starts deteriorating, you know what I mean? That's scarier to me than anything else.
I think the concept continues to work. A man falling apart works, but I think what keeps the movie scary is that it's still very effective at creating an atmosphere and creating a terrifying moment. And I think those slow periods do that. I think anyone, you sit down some 12, 14-year-old to watch The Shining now, and they're going to be mesmerized by the twin girls in the hallway shot, the buckets of blood coming down the elevator, the writing on the door. Yeah. And my personal favorite, the fat guy in the bunny suit blowing off the old dude. I mean, these are all incredibly powerful images that stick with you. And they may not scare you, but they disturb you in a really deep sense. And I've always loved that each of these shots that I talked about is literally seconds long. The rabbit shot is less than a second long. It's really powerful how he puts it together. And so that's what makes it still scary, because I used to be terrified the first time I lived in a house with hardwood floors, because all I could imagine was the sound of that big wheel rolling on carpet and then on hardwood and then on carpet again. That sound became terrifying.
Very deliberate.
Yeah, that sound becomes terrifying. So I think those things are not specific to the concept of the movie or the performances or even the fact that we all know a lot of the lines from the movie. You watch it and it still sticks with you.
I would agree. Yeah, true. I mean, yeah, you're right. There are just certain images you can't get out of your mind. And when you're sitting there and you suddenly are like looking at two little girls holding hands, looking all pleasant, and then all of a sudden you get a flash to them being chopped up on the floor. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's just it's one of those things that's like you're not supposed to see it. Do you know? Like, it's just like it's voyeuristic in a way. So it definitely sticks with you. So I do think you're right. But I also think that a lot of this is, you know, I mean, I still don't quite understand what was going on with the kid. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I get that.
He was a psychic.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he's a psychic.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. That's it. Okay. He's a psychic. That's fair. Has the quote unquote the shine, so he's able to see the things in the because remember there are only three characters in the movie that kind of see what's going on. There's Jack because he's going crazy.
Right.
There's the gardener garage man guy, Halloran,
and Scatman Brothers,
and Danny, because they're both psychic, so they're attuned to it. Now what's happening to Jack is sort of weird. Like, is the Overlook haunted, or is it because in the book the Overlook is less haunted and more Jack's alcoholism gets the better of him? So right. Like, you know, the metaphor, and this is why Stephen King didn't like the movie for so many years, because he wrote a book that was about alcoholism, and Stephen King doesn't really necessarily write books that are about big ideas, but this one was particularly personal to him, that it's about alcoholism and how it can destroy your life and kill your family. And so there are ghosts, and yes, it's haunted, but he would have liked the metaphor to work better, whereas Kubrick just went, no, the house is haunted and he's going crazy. I mean, that's the answer.
I think it was just, though, it was like people who are all together aren't able to see these things, but as he started descending into madness, he became more open to them.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of that kind of thing. So it makes sense that over time. The thing about the kid, I just never really understood if the kid was possessed or getting possessed, you know, like certain, I was very confused by that, it makes sense.
Who is the imaginary friend? And that's, it's not a bit clear who is this guy who's trying, this other imaginary friend that's trying to protect him.
Because I never read the book, which is probably to my chagrin. You know,
I always have taken it that it was benevolent benevolent possession, almost, where it's a, you know, he talks to him through his finger
I don't know if that's possessing me. That's you know, it's not like he took control of him and made him do something. It's like, hey, Danny, I'm talking to you.
but there's somehow he's like connected, like he's inside him, because as he had mentioned, like that he lives in his mouth.
Yeah.
You know, that maybe what the boy is saying is relatively true, and the fact that he's basically sharing his body with this other entity who's, he just wants to hang out, and he likes the kid. He wants to make sure he's okay.
And he lives in his mouth, which is creepy as crap.
Well, better place. You got a better place on his body than you? I know.
Okay, now we're talking about a submarine. We need to move on.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, oh, creepy. Anyway. But, yeah, I know.
I never thought that the movie, and maybe because I had known stuff about it before I actually ever watched the movie, I've never thought this movie is scary to me. It's more of a thriller, a psychological movie about somebody who's starting to crack. And there's all these other supernatural things kind of influencing that for his isolation, even though he's with his family, and all these other factors, what's going to drive him crazy and everything. Like, the reason why he saw all those people, maybe it wasn't necessarily that it was haunted, but because of the psychological impact of the story being told to him.
True. It could be. When you're out there by yourself, I mean, that, you know, you do start to see things when you're kind of isolated, and you know, I think that there is some of that is there. You know, if somebody tells you, you know, we're not sure, but we really think this place is haunted. People have heard that this happens and this happens and that happens, and then you're out there by yourself in this huge place for months, you know, and there's nowhere to go and nothing to do, like, your brain is going to start thinking about it, you know. Yeah. I think it's unrealistic.
I do think that the Kubrick movie goes towards your route, where it's not necessarily a horror film, it's more of a suspense thriller with these sort of themes. Stephen King eventually wrote the screenplay for the miniseries version, which is much more obvious about ghost and all this other stuff, all these other options. So, you know, these are all sort of various ways the movies could be made. Kubrick just wanted to make somewhat of a more cerebral ghost. And I still think that is scary, but it's hard now when, you know, we watch Saw and all this other stuff to sort of be terrified by a kid running around a hallway. But I do believe that if you go see this movie in some movie theater on a very wide screen, you'll get sucked into it and you will be disturbed by it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the hardest part of this whole thing is just that concept of losing your mind. Because once you don't have your mind anymore, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of over. You know, because you can't, you know, and I think that's hard. That's a difficult concept, because, you know, if you can't control your body, you can't control your actions, you can't communicate. You can't do all these things. It's like, that's probably the scariest thing to me, you know, and that's all natural. And it's just, and if it's just happening organically, that's the scarier part, you know? So that's why I find this movie very creepy in that aspect.
Yeah. So it's The Shining.
Yeah, that is The Shining. Oh, I will add that I used to watch this movie every Saturday with my siblings, like 11:30 at midnight on a tiny screen. We would just sort of lay on a bed, like crosswise, watching this on a tiny little screen. And, you know, it does hold up to repeated watchings, but you kind of have to give into it.
Yeah.
It would always come in, it would be The Shining, and then later on it'd be It.
So, oh, yeah.
Haven't gotten to that
Pennywise,
yet.
Pennywise. Oh, one thing we did not mention, though, that clearly Ray wanted us to talk about was the soundtrack.
Completely forgettable.
You think so?
You know, I didn't even realize that there was a soundtrack until I actually thought about it. Mm. And it's like, well, there's lots of big places inside where there's no music or anything. It's just the sound of what's going on in the place. And I just totally forgot. Like, I don't even remember if there was any background music when he was riding his big wheel around. And we had that scene where he was going from wood flooring to carpet.
There's constant background music. I mean, there's Kubrick's big about that. There's always something, even when it's not meant to be. Yeah. There's no music playing. There's a radio playing in another room or like that. Like the score for this movie, as I recall, there's a lot of orchestral pieces. He uses a lot of classical music.
There's a lot of like high shrill, like ding 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 ding. You know, it might not be like a full on like orchestra playing, but it's like clearly an instrument being picked.
And in the notes, And in the notes, they talk about that originally there was an entire electronic score that was written for the movie that wasn't used. So there at least was at some time a thought that they would make a lot of shrill sounds, very much like Clockwork Orange, that has this very modern electronica score that's part of it.
But clearly it doesn't fit for everybody.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's one of those, like a lot of Kubrick movies, you have to give in to it. And it doesn't make it easy for you. And I think that, not to belittle film education right now, because movies are great right now, but it's a very different way of watching a movie. And I think that it's hard to get a guy to sit down on a TV screen and say, you're going to watch this for 2.5 hours and you're not going to move. And you're gonna, and that's how this movie's going to work. That's difficult.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So what have we learned from The Shining? We have learned some places are like people. Some shine and some don't.
Mm-hmm.
Also, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. I've always appreciated this movie and other Stanley Kubrick movies for its technical value. The acting was great. The cinematography was great. But the problem I had with it was the pacing. I always feel a little bored when watching this movie. It's a movie for your what you haven't watched and should see list. But at least for my rewatch list, it doesn't make it.
Go ahead, Carlos.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize we were doing this out of order. But yeah, for me, it's a movie that I always watch every couple of years just because I always like seeing how the pieces are put together and because I do enjoy that feeling of being disturbed and the powerful of the images. And I enjoy looking forward to the sections of the movies that come up. I still marvel at how it's such a big movie and that it's hard to conceive that they did it all and the stories behind it and all that stuff. It's just one of those movies with a lot of history to it, and I enjoy revisiting that history, which of course makes it hard for me to see it as a new person just sitting down and watching it. But I do recognize that it's a movie that demands things of you. It demands you to sit down for a while to sort of let it go in and just let yourself be disturbed by it. You know, it probably could benefit from a few more jump scares to get people sort of more revved up. But I do believe that it's well-deserved in that top 10 list of horror movies of all time, possibly even top 5 horror movies of all time, because it really does work its way into you.
I agree with that, too. I mean, in any movie that took a year to make, you would hope that, there was going to be some good stuff coming out of it. But I've always liked the movie, but just not loved it. I think it was probably that I was kind of way too young to understand it when I was a kid. But when I watch it today, I just don't have the energy to sit through some of it. But however, I do love just about anything Stephen King puts out there. And when he's going to be together with an epic director like Stanley Kubrick, I would expect nothing less than a classic. Overall, I definitely think at the time it was super innovative and truly scary because it's all about your mind and your mind going crazy and stuff. So I think that's one of the scariest things of all.
So let's add The Shining to our list. Actually, it's already on the list, so we're going to do some re-ranking of it onto our flick chart list here. So right now, it's currently at 58 in our flick chart list.
Okay.
Let's see if we can hone this down to a different position. So which movie would you rather watch? The Shining versus Ocean's 13?
The Shining.
I like Ocean's 13, but I will pick The Shining.
The Shining versus Wall-E. Ooh, this is a tricky one.
Wall-E.
Wall-E because I prefer crying versus being terrified. So I have to pick the crying, and Wall-E will always make me cry.
I agree with that too. The Shining versus Ocean's 12.
For me, The Shining. I was not really in Ocean's.
Damn. I would go with The Shining.
The Shining versus Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. I'm all about The Last Crusade on this one.
Last Crusade. I'll go with you, Jeff.
I guess it's no Temple of Doom, but I'd go with
Last Crusade to me beats that Temple.
But it's not the Crystal Skull.
That's true. The Shining versus Milk.
Ooh, The Shining.
Ooh. The Shining. Yeah. I love Milk. Milk is very close to my heart. But The Shining,
both good movies.
One more important than the other. We can't deny the importance of one movie over the other. But I can't handle staring at Sean Penn's face that long. So yeah. I would prefer The Shining.
Yeah. In some sense, with Milk, you kind of have to be in the mood. Well, yeah. In some sense, The Shining, you have to be in the mood too. But I think I'd probably easily get into The Shining movie over Milk. The Shining versus Steel Magnolias.
Steel Magnolias.
Wow, you are a Southern boy. Steel Magnolias has not been one of those films that I really feel deeply for. So I would have to say The Shining.
I'm going to have to say Steel Magnolias because I find it more entertaining. Because there's more stuff going on.
And by the way, just a quick notation, this weekend is when the remake of Steel Magnolias comes out on Lifetime.
Let's not call it a remake. I'm getting a little disgruntled when people referring to it as a remake, because I think people say it in a derogatory way.
I'm not saying it that
way. Okay, good. Yeah, no. I mean, this is a play that's performed in lots of parts of the country with different people in it. So, like, it's a living work that people, like, I guess sometimes people feel like they should freeze Steel Magnolias in a jar and never, ever do anything with it. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this all-black version of Steel Magnolias.
Great. Yeah, I know, there's all kind. It's like the Vagina Monologues.
Yeah.
People do it with different groups. People do it with different ways. I just think that for a lot of people, the what we know as Steel Magnolias that was done with, you know, with Dolly Parton and everybody, it just has stood alone, kind of another as kind of a classic. Yeah. So to film a whole new version of it is going to be really interesting to see how it comes out.
And it's going to be a nice different take. And I think I just have this good feeling from what I've seen of previews and such that it's going to be a nice sweet take. So
I'm already down for Alfred Woodard.
Yeah, I'm down for Queen Latifah and Jill Scott. This is all going to be fun.
Yeah, they've got a great cast and everything.
Also, the story and the script work so well already. So unless they take big changes, because really, you can do the exact same Steel Magnolias except cast them differently, and it still works. But if they start making changes to the characters and what happens, then I'm a little bit more leery.
Yeah, it seems like they might have like some different slight changes. Mainly, it looks like it could be a little bit more modern or something. But I mean, like the girl getting married, she's all about pink still. Yeah. You know? So they're taking the big things and maybe slight changes to dialogue or something.
Yeah.
But overall, I mean, some of the lines that they show in the trailer. Was it like the exact same thing from the original movie, just a different actress was doing it and probably different blocking or something. So, this is just a retelling might be a better word, not a remake.
Remounting is the word I would use. Okay.
Anyways, The Shining is now 56 on our flick chart, so just some slight honing. Still kind of stuck around that 50 area. With that, let's go into the press.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
Looper. 94% fresh, 90% audience. Directed by Rian Johnson, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Bruce Willis, and Emily Blunt. And unfortunately, due to certain circumstances, I was not able to see this movie, and I am very sad for that.
We are very sad for you.
I will leave it to YouTube.
Well, okay, first we have to talk about one thing. How much do we talk about this movie? Because there is, this is one of those spoiler movies where if you talk too much about it, you might affect other people's viewing of it. So we need to figure out what is the line here about the things we could talk about.
Okay, I'll tell you this. I'm a spoilerful person. I can be completely spoiled about a movie. Then when I actually go see it and actually see it, it's more about the experience than spoilers. In any case, if somebody is listening to this show, they should realize, warning, spoiler alert, you should already know this. And if you don't, well, why are you listening to this show?
Oh, yeah, we spoil.
Come back later.
Oh, no, sorry. No, I wanted to make sure that was clear because I didn't want to go too far.
Yeah. No, we spoil. We spoil.
This movie, I will say, amazed me. Both because, one, I've been highly anticipating it for a long time because Rian Johnson is one of my favorites. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt has proven in the last couple of years that he's definitely the next big thing. He is the thing in Hollywood, and hopefully his career will only grow and grow. It's already huge, but I really want him to grow.
Because I want him to knock off Shia LaBeouf.
I want him to knock. He's like, in some ways, he's like the better, smarter version of Shia LaBeouf.
There you go.
With an actual, who's paid the dues that Shia LaBeouf has not paid. Right. We all remember Joseph Gordon-Levitt when he was a little kid doing movies. Anyway, I was highly anticipating. It's a time travel movie. It's a science fiction film. This movie is tailor-made for me to make it. If you're listening to this and you haven't seen Brick, you should go see Brick. It is a very difficult movie, but it is incredibly rewarding, and you won't see anything else like it ever. Brick being Rian Johnson's first film. Brothers Bloom, you can kind of ignore. So I was really highly anticipating it. So I took a day off work, and I went to see this movie. And I'm like, a time travel movie. Okay, that's fine. I read something online that the second act was a little slow, and people didn't like it. So I was prepared for it. And I'm like, yeah, this is a little slow. But I'm interested because this is sort of a weird little world, and kind of the time travel movie just kind of stopped, and another movie started up. And I'm like, oh, this is weird. And then something happens in this movie. And I start squealing. I mean, this is like, this movie is not about time travel. This movie is something else, that time travel is just sitting around it. And I was really impressed with that.
You're exactly right. It caught me completely off guard. I guess what I should ask, I'm curious, Jeff. I know you were one of the people who really wanted us to see this. And it was clearly because it was one of the ones that we talked about actually several times. What do you think this movie is about? Not having seen it yet.
Honestly, it's what you would expect from the trailer, just the basic storyline. I don't know what more it has into it. All I know is there's got to be something more to this besides the fact that the future him is sent back in time for him to kill.
Right.
And since he already knows that he's going to kill himself, he figures to protect himself, and there's something. There's a reason why he does this. I would almost think that if for some reason he thinks that everything is going as it should be and everything, that when it gets to his time to kill himself, he would know it and go back. But there must be something more. I just don't know what it is.
Okay. You're on the same page that I was going into this movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, Carlos, how much you knew going into the movie, but that's all I had.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone who has seen the trailer and talked about this movie, I am confident that it's a time travel movie, which means that there are going to be paradoxes, there's going to be fun bits, and it's about trying to fix the past in order to save the future. Like but in this way, it's very personal, and the whole mobster gang thing, and you know that aspect. I think that's what it is. I think no one expects this movie to be about the Phoenix. This goes into a comic book, like Phoenix level territory of like great big bad evil amazingness.
The part that you're talking about, to be truthful, Jeff, the part that you mention is what happens in the first 45 minutes of the movie. You know, like I mean, really, it happens at the very beginning, but I mean, like that part of the whole process of the plot is processed and done within 45 minutes of the movie.
I wouldn't even go that far. I would go further. I think you know, there's the description of the world. There's, you see a couple of actions. You see something bit there, and then the Bruce Willis shows up. You're like at 15 minutes,
yeah,
and then you meet the boy, and it's like 30 minutes.
Maybe 30. Yeah, true. But then it goes into a whole different territory.
And there is a moment in this movie that I just like, you know, it's the moment where the kid's falling down and she's running towards him, and it's all in super slow-mo. And I'm sitting there going, you've gathered enough pieces of what's been happening that you have various ideas of what's really going on. And they're all fighting with each other about, you know, what's really happening, like, what's this really about? And then, you know, I'm sitting there going, well, maybe she's going to do this or maybe he's going to do that. And then it's freeze frames. There's like a freeze frame that's
right.
Like, this really started with Zombieland. In Zombieland, you had the super slow-mo where it's like pristine high-def images, but there's really small movements that are happening. I mean, if you remember the beginning of Zombieland, it's like that. That's what this is like, where it's a very big shot. Like, it's very wide. There's a character on one side of the screen. The other one's on the far other side of the screen, and everything else is frozen. But there's a little action, and it slowly sort of expands. And I remember going, it's a moment of incredible power and tension, and what's happened and what's actually happening is also really powerful. That it really, from that point on, your mind is blown and you don't know what's going to happen next.
Right. Ultimately, when I think about what is this movie, without having read reviews prior to this, what I kind of gather is it's someone who thinks. It's very heady. It's a very heady movie. All in all, I kind of feel that it's one where it's someone thinks that by making a change in the past, it's going to actually make the future better. But again, it's a paradox movie where you have to ask yourself, I don't know if making this change is really worth it. You know, it's like, will this change make things better or not?
I would explain it a little differently. I would say that this movie is about boys and the choices they make that make them into the men they end up becoming. True. In many ways, when Bruce Willis goes back in time, what he's trying to do is to make it so that he can sort of forgive all the mistakes. So he tries to get rid of what lost time in a way. Like, and when he meets himself, he's like, you're a boy. You don't know anything. And I hate myself because I am you. And I, you know, there's a lot of like, how do we become the men that we end up becoming, and those choices. And it's weird because time travel movies are never about this. I mean, when when you talk about Back to the Future, he goes back to try to get his mother and father to actually, like, it's totally a mistake. He has no real goal. He just has to try to correct the errors. And Bill and Ted is about trying to, you know, write a paper, you know, and like the hilarity that ensues. But, you know, you would think that if you had the power of time travel, I would go back and talk, and if I'm an adult, you know, I would go back and try to talk to the 20-year-old version of me and make different choices. And so it's fun that this movie is somewhat about that, where he goes back and he's not expecting to see himself really, or at least he's not expecting to interact a lot with himself. But a lot of the conversations they have are not about who should we kill and what happens in the future. Is how did you become me and how did I become you?
Yeah.
Like, how does that happen? It's a weird conversation for a science fiction movie, but it's really there. And then with the boy, I mean, the whole issue with the boy is how do we make him into the person that he's supposed to be or the person that we would rather him be? And like, that's a really interesting point.
What you understand from this movie, and I'm going to, here comes the straight spoil, just so you kind of get the concept of where we're coming from. Basically, you find out that 30 years from now, where time travel is possible, everything is controlled by like a warlord, basically. And what he does is he sends people that he wants to get rid of back in time for people like Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character to kill. So a guy was sent from the future to come back and like recruit people, like a mafia of people who will basically, they all have assigned locations where they're going to go, assigned times that they're supposed to show up. When somebody appears, they shoot them. That's what their job is, and get rid of the body. Just plain and simple. Yeah, but that's what it's all about. Well, in 30 years from the day, pretty much like 30 years, like from the time you eventually you're going to get your loop closed is basically what it means, is that you know that you're going to be one of the people you have to kill. You just know that because they always send the loopers who were doing the killing 30 years ago back.
Yeah. Well, I think like there is a change that happens. Everyone knows that eventually it ends. Eventually it ends, but it's
they far don't know in the exactly future.
What, right. Yeah. But then what happens is that more and more of them start dying. It seems that someone in the future has decided to start closing all the loops because although, you know, the future is controlled by gangs, it's gangs. Well, suddenly there's one person who's actually taking control of everything and is closing all the loops.
Right.
And Bruce Willis, who lives his entire life, you know, after he kills himself, lives his entire life. And then when he's sent back, he's a different person because of things that have happened to him. And he decides he wants to make that future never happen because he hates who he is. And so he decides to, in order to do that, he tries to find the guy who's ruling the world when he's a child and kill him then.
Right.
And this is where, like, that sounds like a fairly straight story, except when when this is another one of the big spoilers. Very early in the movie, as an aside, they mentioned, oh, yeah, a few years ago there was a mutation and some people have really minor, tiny telekinetic powers. Totally left field. Like, what are we talking about telekinetic? But just an aside, some of them, they can lift quarters up in the air about a couple of inches. It's a silly thing. Who gives a shit? You know, these guys are freaks. They're mutants. No one cares. And then, of course, the rig reveal is that the Niddle boy, who is going to become the warlord, can't just move around Niddle quarters with his hand.
Like, yeah, he's like Storm / Phoenix / he's like the first real mutant.
Yeah. Like Omega level, extinction event type.
Right. Power. I can look at you and turn you into a glop of blood.
Yeah.
Just that explodes.
And it's shot so beautifully. I mean, the scene in the field where he's on the floor and his head pops up. Whoever this kid is brilliant because he was cute and then utterly terrifying.
Right.
within a second.
Like, what you find out is that, you know, his mom, for example, she knows that when he gets upset, things start shaking and she runs and gets into a safe.
Yeah.
It's bad. Yeah,
when that happened, I was actually not totally certain what was going on.
Me either. I thought it was a storm rolling in. You don't know what for sure. Yeah.
Because the movie, again, this is why Rian Johnson, I think, is very talented. Because before, the film uses little effects to show things happening, like when he takes drugs, the room gets spinning and whatnot, when he wakes up, when he falls down. The movie uses a lot of surreal sort of like film tricks as part of a way of showing experience. So when the kid gets angry and the mother is trying to calm him down and the film frame starts shaking and the sound switches, I thought it was just an effect and connected to her emotional state. I thought she was upset and the movie was just kind of showing that. So then I wondered, well, maybe she's like super powerful and she just wants to protect herself from her child.
Yeah.
And that's why at the end,
then she's like, calm down, honey. I'll be right back. Runs to the panic room. Locks herself in.
And I thought it was totally on her. So when the kid is falling down the stairs and she runs to jump at him, I thought she was going to use her power to keep him from falling. Gotcha. I thought she was the powerful figure. I thought he was just a kid, a weird, smart, talented kid, but not necessarily that. So it's a great sort of twist. Like she's running towards the kid. And then we notice that she's not running toward the kid at all. She's running to grab Joseph Gordon-Levitt and throw him out outside. And as soon as they fall outside, the entire first floor of the house just explodes. And I mean, so it's like, that was just really nicely done. I know some people are probably going to watch it and figure it out from the minute it starts happening. But I really do believe that it is a wonderful little reveal that happens.
It's a real interesting way that they did this. Exactly. And then it comes down to like the morality piece of the whole thing. Like I really do like how they made this character like, he was a street kid who got found by the mafia and given a gun, basically, and said, we'll pay you to do this. So he, you know, he's now grown up, you know, like screwing hookers and eating the best food and living in the best places and making buku money and all stuff. But, you know, and then he thinks he's going to live his life this way for the rest of existence. Well, as he grows older, he starts to get morals. He wants to settle down. He wants to start a family. And then all of a sudden it's taken away from him because of his deal, his Looper deal.
Yeah.
You know, then he comes back. And the only way he can think to try to solve all this issue is to kill the kid. But he doesn't know which kid he needs to kill. So what's his solution, Jeff?
Kill them all?
Yes.
Yes. Which is wonderful. Like, how many times, like, you never see movies where kids get killed. And this movie has three situations where people take shots at children in attempts to kill them.
So Bruce Willis has now decided that he knows exactly when the kid was born, what hospital, and what time. You know, when, where, and based on all this stuff. So he knows that it's down to like three kids. So his decision is, since I don't know which kid it is, I'm going to kill them all. And that will solve the issue. So it's you know, now he's in this moral loop of, you know, and you see the angst he goes through thinking about, like, this is awful. I can't believe I'm going to do this, or I did this. Now what's going to happen? You know, so it's real, real heady. You know, this movie is real interesting, just with tons of twists and turns.
There's a wonderful line where the young one is asking the old guy, old version, well, who is she? It's like, well, she saved your life. How? He's like, no, she saved my life. And of course, you don't be like, wait, he wasn't like in peril. And then you realize he meant morally. He saved her from being a bad person. And now he's trying to make sure that she lives again. But in doing so, he's becoming a bad person again. So it really ends up being very heady and very sort of thematic and emotional and character based. While this is happening, there's a kid who's being like manifesting as like a super psychic that is very fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of plot points we haven't touched on, but you kind of get the point of how this is so crazy, and it's not what you thought it was going to be necessarily going into it. That part of the movie is resolved. Mm-hmm. You know, I did have to say, though, I got to give them a special shout out, though, for the whole torture scene.
Yeah.
Where there was one other person who escaped from getting killed by his looper, and how they handle that situation is pretty damn creepy.
Yeah, that part was really awesome to watch.
Yeah.
There's also the other issue. I mean, I think when people think of it as a time travel movie, they're going in looking for how the time travel doesn't work. And I think because Rian decided to make this movie a shell, like put the time travel inside something else, the time travel doesn't work itself. Like, there are many ways people are pointing out the flaws and the paradoxes, stuff like that. And I think that is unfortunate, because it does take you out of the movie. Like, if you do stop and go, well, wait, why did this person die? Because if he didn't, that's the other thing. That seems weird. But of course, with time travel movies, like, what you're watching is often at the end reset because of what they did, and your brain's going to hurt eventually. So I just say, let the time travel things just slide and enjoy the way the characters are deciding and making choices.
Right. That's how I felt too. As I went along, I was just like, this is really interesting. I just quit trying to worry about the randomness, you know, and just go with it. But you know, I will say too, though, and there's just something super creepy about little kids having that kind of level of power when they don't know how to control it, or it's emotion based. You know, like, just the thought of
a tantrum. I mean, how many times have we seen a little child at a mall just start throwing toys? Well, imagine him, instead of throwing toys, he's throwing cars everywhere.
Or he blows he can blow the mall up.
Yeah,
you know, that just was creepy.
Yeah, and there's a wonderful shot near the end of the movie where, like, they're replaying what could happen, and right before a big decision is made, and they think they imagine the kid, like, on his own, devoid of his mother, living in this world by himself. And in that, there's one shot of him in a railway car, like, hugging a blanket, just sitting there looking out the window. And in that moment, you can see the man that grows around this boy, the hateful, angry, violent, telekinetic that's going to destroy the world. You see it all in this one little, what is he, like, 11-year-old's face?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the where the movie reaches its moment of everything works.
He's 11, but I swear he looks 6.
Yeah, yeah.
Or 10 years old or something.
He's very young. He's very young. Yeah. But I think that's where the movie makes its point about how inside every boy, there is the man that will become that boy, and the opposite is true. Yeah. And that became a really interesting dichotomy, especially since we have to mention it. They changed Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face with makeup and prosthetics to make him look like Bruce Willis. And that was very distracting because I know what Joseph Gordon-Levitt looks like.
That's true. I was wondering what was weird. I didn't even think about that.
They changed,
but
like,
I did notice the whole time, I'm like, he does look weird. There's something weird about him.
Yeah. They made him. They gave him like a bigger jaw, and they changed his eyebrows to make him more look. And I think the point is because you had to be able to see one inside the other in order for the whole masterwork to work. But I know what Bruce Willis looked like when he was young. I watched Mood Lighting a lot, you know. Yeah. So it's like it's kind of hard for me to sort of buy into it all the way. So I wish they had just not done it at all. But I now, when I think about the larger piece, I understand why it was important for Johnson that these two characters really look like younger version, like the younger version of him.
Now so, I'm going to have to go look at their faces, his faces like that. But good point. Well, critically, there were really, clearly it was a positive movie. Original and fresh. People thought it had clever dialogue. There is enough left unexplained that the viewer has to contribute his or her own interpretation. Actually, critics liked that. Where it wasn't fully explained, not everything was there. And then also interesting characters. Yeah. The negatives, there were only two negatives in this whole thing. One was the time travel aspects were not well defined, which Carlos has already noted, and just seemed to be affectations. Basically just, you know, it was just a mention in the film. And that's okay. That's fine. And too many things were going on, just made it kind of mind-numbing to follow everything, basically. And I can see both of those points, but I can also see that from somebody who's not willing to suspend belief and just go, you know, and just go with the movie.
Many people are going to compare this movie to Primer, a recent science fiction time travel movie. And the big difference is that Primer is entirely about the mechanics of time travel. And in many ways, although I like the film, it feels like it's an essay about time travel. And that is why I prefer the Looper version of Holding It. Like, time travel is interesting, but it's only interesting in the way that it can tell a story. So the fact that Looper tells a story that is interesting and noteworthy and valuable and uses time travel to tell the story makes me forgive it about the fact that the time travel doesn't really work all the way, or it leaves you with more questions. But I definitely do understand that argument that they wish that they spent more time with time travel. But at that point, then it's a movie that's about nothing but time travel.
Yep. So what did we learn?
We have learned that time travel will be invented 30 years from now. We've learned that time travel fries your brain like an egg. In the future, don't go to Paris, go to China. And never let your target escape, even if it's you. I'm assuming this was awesome. And when I do see it, I expect to love
it. Yeah, I need to see this movie with a big crowd of people who haven't seen it, because I want to see the reaction when the reveal happens.
Yeah, true. I really didn't know what to expect going into it, so I found the story and the plot twist kind of very interesting and different. Definitely an action and cerebral thriller in one, so it sucked me in. And I really like that. And all in all, kudos to you, Hollywood, for an original concept that wasn't a remake. Yeah, it wasn't a remake, a reboot, a do it over again. Just thank you for something new.
What would you call this movie, this year's Inception?
Yes.
Yes. Inception is a bigger movie, I think. Inception proved a lot of things, but it's an example of a movie that's about something that is unique. I would almost, you know, I recently saw Up in the Air again, and similar to how Up in the Air felt like it was very much about that year, I think this movie is going to stand out coming down the line, that it's going to be a movie where, like, the movie people point to and say, hey, look, someone's actually out there making movies that people care about.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't just a way to make money. These are people who are making movies that are important to them, and they're making them that way.
And it's it's a unique universe. It's a unique storyline. Sure, it has to pull elements from a lot of different things. Like, you know, it really made me think a little bit of like origin of X-Men, you know, almost, you know, a little bit in some ways. But still, it was a unique concept. It was very entertaining. It was an action thriller, but also had a lot of, you know, if you like crime movies, if you like gangster movies, you could like this. If you like, I don't know, if you just like Bruce Willis, you would like this because it's a really interesting role for him. You know, there's a lot of reasons to like this movie. And so I give them a big, huge thumbs up for that, for actually doing something new.
Go see Looper.
Yes, yes, it's worth it. Worth your time.
Definitely go see it so I can start talking about it.
More. All right, moving on into the future.
Hi, welcome to the future. And I'm telling you, it's great here.
Red Dawn, releasing November 21st, 2012, directed by Dan Bradley, starring Chris Hemsworth, Isabel Lucas, and Josh Hutcherson. Town in Washington State becomes the initial target of a foreign invasion under enemy occupation. The town citizens are taken prisoner. A group of young people calling themselves the Wolverines after their high school mascot band together in the surrounding woods. There they train and organize themselves into a group of guerrilla fighters in order to liberate their town. So, wait a minute. Let's go back a bit here to the original Red Dawn.
1984. Yes, 1984.
At that time, didn't it take place like in Colorado?
Yes.
Instead of Washington? So they brought it closer to the seaboard to, in some sense, make
which
it
makes,
more plausible.
Makes sense for Korea.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I mean, even with Russia, it's whatever's on the coast on that side, I would say. And also, it's more north. So that's just my opinion. Instead
I
of
think
being.
It was what it was in Colorado. It was because I think they were trying to go there because it was Midwest. You know, where else would you want to start if you destroy the middle and move out?
Also, no, it's because that's where North American radio command is.
NORAD, yeah, true.
Yeah. Right. So there's like it's a high value military target, but obviously it's arbitrary. In the new version, it being in the Northwest and there being North Koreans makes more sense.
Yeah.
That was one of the questions, was significance of changing it from basically Soviets. While Russia was probably the primary, it apparently also had Cuba and Nicaragua were participating in the events of the previous one. But in this case, it's North Koreans, mainly because they're the current quote-unquote Soviet threat.
Yeah.
Now, what I'm wondering is if in this story they're somehow going to say that South Korea had fallen to the North Koreans. Because I don't think that the North Koreans would get to the United States without first taking South Korea. But that's just me.
It'll be interesting to see what they say, period, about this whole thing. Because one of the things that really hits me with this is I remember seeing Red Dawn as a kid, and I loved this movie. Like, I wished that I was in the woods with them, you know, like dealing with all this stuff for some reason. But also at that time, we weren't really at war. You know, it was several years before we went to the Middle East the first time around. So I think it was an interesting play on what could potentially happen. But then nowadays, of clearly, like, you know, half of our country has been to war in the, you know, in their lifetime, and is now coming back, and now we're talking about North Korea because that's what's in the headlines right now. It's an interesting choice to do this movie. I mean, I know that it was supposed to be released a year ago because initially it was going to be November 2011, but then stuff got backed up for whatever reason. I still haven't heard the reasoning behind that, yeah. But now we're in a different generation.
Yeah, I thought that it was good, especially the trailer makes it point out about, you know, you've inherited your freedom, now you have to earn it. In some way, it's about, like, the children of America taking ownership of the country in a way, like trying to grow up. I mean, the original Red Dawn was really kind of about that, where, you know, your parents are always talking about these Russians, and now you have to deal with them personally. Like, what do you do with them? And now the but this one seems to be more about, hey, you slacker kids, you know, welcome to the 21st century. This is what being in a country is about. So it is going to be interesting. Obviously, you can't separate the current political situation from what's going to happen.
That's an interesting point. I didn't think of it from that perspective, but you're absolutely right. You're basically saying, you know, for lack of our term, kids have gotten soft and haven't had to earn their keep. But I would have thought that would have been more evident in 84, you know, versus today. But you're right. So you're absolutely correct.
What's the sort of message that they're trying to communicate here? Is it to show that people really, we feel safe in the United States because, you know, we've got two oceans between our big enemies. You know, everybody else, you know, to the north of us, well, they're Canadians. Sure, they're probably going to eventually invade us on their skates, but that's once hell freezes over or the next ice age comes.
They're going to start sliding the curling stones at us. Mm-hmm.
So they'll eventually take over, we know, but they've been quite friendly lately. And Mexico, well, they're causing trouble, but they're really nothing of a threat as a nation or anything. And going even further south, I mean, there's still a lot of water between us, even though there's this strip of land between us. And they've got their own problems that they're dealing with down there and just, you know, keeping it to themselves. They're not really any sort of threat to us. The only threats to us are now possibly Koreans, although I think right now that's just pretty much a Soviet state, and they have this issue with us having democracy in South Korea, and that's about it. But and then anything in the Middle East and down into the Arab countries that there's a threat for. But they're way on the opposite side of the world from us, so we feel very safe. This is showing, hey, just realize that if somebody comes over, let's say the North Koreans actually do come over and invade the United States, what are you going to do? Are you actually going to be proud of your country and fight back? Right. Or are you just going to run and hide and die or something? Mm-hmm. So it's a question which never comes up because we feel so safe in the United States just because of these things.
True.
I think that's true. I mean, you don't see movies like this. I think that's why this is a big deal that it's remaking, because you don't really see movies where we have to sort of defend ourselves from another power inside the country. So I'm looking forward to seeing the movie fully to figure out what its message is. But obviously, there's a lot of energy and a lot of potency in what they could do right now.
Yeah.
Another question could be, why are they essentially... to me, from this, it's really kind of a separate movie from the first one. They've got the similar things of the Wolverines and a Soviet country invading us. That's the two things which are the same. Everything else, what country, and everything else seems to be different to me. Why did they have to call it Red Dawn?
Red Dawn, right. I would agree with you on that one, too. Well, you know what?
It's close. I mean, it's hard to – if they called it something else, people were like, hey, there's some similarities to Red Dawn. I mean, it's close enough.
Yeah. I mean, they are doing some very literal reshot scenes. I can tell you that from the trailer. If you haven't seen the original one in a long time, there were some very specific shots that I already saw in the trailer that I'm like, okay, they chose to definitely use that to make a point of this is Red Dawn. You know? So it'd be interesting to see where they go with it. I mean, I'll give them a chance, but don't ruin my childhood.
Yeah, and I don't think it really should be the intent. I mean, this is one of those movies, kind of like we were talking about Steel Magnolias, because it is kind of a tale that could be told at any time. It's a timeless tale. In this case, it's you know, more violent.
It could be kind of insert enemy here.
Yeah, basically, it's insert enemy here invading the United States, and then, you know, a pack of untrained children, or quote-unquote children, they're probably like 18, 19.
Young adults.
Young adults are like, damn it, you're not invading my country. You get out of my country. I'm going to kick your ass if you don't get out. And taking pride in the country and fighting back to keep what's theirs. So it is kind of a timeless, and I would actually call this definitely more of a retelling than a remake. Fair enough. That makes any sense. Now, and this is based off of our conversation early in the show, so it changes a couple of my opinions that I've had for this. But I'll say the same thing. You know, as I said, it's a good little modern take on a classic movie. In some sense, I wish that they would call it something different or not make it a remake. Maybe mention the inspiration for it, but not really make it really being a remake, if that makes any sense. And I think I figured out what the sense is. Yes, it's not a remake. It's a retelling.
You've convinced yourself.
Yeah.
I've always loved the original. So again, it's going to be something from my childhood that's kind of being redone with a new spin. I'm going to give it the opportunity to be good. But I don't think I'm going to have the same visceral reaction I did when I was younger, you know, because it was just like, so this could never happen, you know, like since, you know, 9/11, things like that. It's sort of like, you know, and you hate to say it, but this could happen. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know what can happen because you never know how crazy your enemies are. So, you know, it's I don't know if I'm going to have that same gut check that I did back then, but I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. I'll give it a shot.
Carlos, what's the summary of your excitement on this movie? Carlos? Hello? Did we lose you? Well, we did.
Oh, no.
We lost Carlos. Ah!
We're just kept on. I was like, wait, wow, where'd he go?
See if we can get him back.
Close the show since we're in.
Might have to. I'm not getting connected. So we lost Carlos. It sounded like he was kind of he was pretty interested in the movie. So
yeah.
So I think it's for all three of us, thumbs up. Let's go check it out. So next week, the coming attractions for next week is in the past, we're going to be taking a look at the original Exorcist. I think I'm being sent the extended edition.
I think it's okay to be watching different editions in this one because I think it's going to be difficult to find out, you know, like what we can find here and there and, you know, that stuff. So even if we all watch something a little different, I think it's going to be add to the conversation.
Yeah. And here's the thing with the in this case is I've never seen The Exorcist.
Okay.
This is the first time I'll have seen it, so
okay,
that'll be pretty interesting to find out. And I'm watching the extended director's cut.
Okay, always look up what the differences of the cuts are, just for conversation.
And in the present, to kind of flip everything on its head, we'll be taking a look at Pitch Perfect, the a cappella thing. I'm kind of excited about more for the music part of it.
Yeah.
Than really any other part of it. And in the future, we'll be taking a look at The Host. There's plenty of ways to contact us. Pop over to our website, cwellmovies.com. Leave a comment on the blog. We appreciate that very much. Also, shoot us an email at cwellmovies@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail. We'd love to hear your voice and play it on the show. That's 361-265-8255. That's 361-COL-TALK to make it easy to remember. Also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/COLmovies, Facebook at facebook.com/COLmovies, Google+ at gplus.2/COLmovies. Any final thoughts? What's been going on our Facebook page? Anything?
Not especially. I'm very excited. I'm going to go see several movies. Tomorrow is the opening movie for the Tampa International Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. So I'm excited to go see something tomorrow night, and then I'm going to go see a few more next week. So very excited about that being here.
So keep watch over the keep watch on Facebook and Twitter for what we post over there. Haven't really been posting much on Google Plus, but we'll probably keep trying to get stuff over there. Also, please pop over to iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review. I'll read whatever you write. Anything you write. I don't, except the dead baby joke. We had that on Cubs Out Loud. And
oh, bad.
I've already done that. I've been there, done there, bought the t-shirt. Let's get something original. So, yeah, that's it. In that case, for me, for Carlos, for Steven, take care, everyone.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, too.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.